this morning. We're going to talk a little bit about fertility and how things have changed over the years, whether it's the science, how procedures are conducted, and the options out there for people. And joining me on the line now is Dr. Beth Taylor, an infertility and egg freezing specialist, also a co-founder and co-director at the Olive Fertility Center. Dr. Taylor, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about this and also kind of tying this into the fact that it is Pride Weekend, and there is, I can imagine, a growing number of people in the LGBTQ community who are also using services of fertility clinics and going through that whole process. So we'll get to that in a second. But first, can you talk a little bit about how the demand has changed or how the whole industry has kind of changed over the years?
Yes, there's been a real explosion in the desire to seek fertility treatment, and it's driven by lots of things. A small part by the LGBTQ community, and a large part by women simply waiting longer to try to get pregnant, and so that often those women will need a little bit of extra help. So we're seeing a real boom for those two reasons and a few others. Yeah, it's really kind of exploding the desire for people to be seen and helped by fertility treatments.
And when we talk about the LGBTQ community, I would imagine, I mean, just based on biology itself, there would be more challenges in that you're not having people in a lot of cases that are coming in with, okay, you've got what we need, we need to find a way to put this together and make it work. You have some other challenges there.
That's right. In most instances, members of the LGBTQ community need something. They need eggs, they need sperm, or they need a uterus, or more than one of those things. That's right.
And so how do you even go about starting the discussion and starting the plan on what it's going to take then to get to somebody, because it's making the assumption they've come to you because they want to grow their family?
That's right. So, for example, if we take a lesbian couple, they would typically need sperm, and they can bring someone they know in as a sperm source, or more commonly, they'll purchase sperm from a bank. And then if we take the example of a gay male couple, those people need a uterus, so they'll typically need a surrogate, and then they'll also need a source of eggs. So they'll get an egg donor, again, someone they know or someone from a bank.
And in Canada, it's different. I've had friends I know that have gone to the States and gone down that route because of some of the challenges when it's in Canada. But how is it as far as accessing, whether it's a gay couple or a lesbian couple, accessing those things that they need?
Yes, I think there's a bit of a myth out there because the rules have historically been kind of prohibitive in Canada, but those rules have loosened up and changed a lot now. And really, there's no restriction to any part of that egg, sperm, surrogacy in Canada. There's rules, of course, we follow, but those opportunities are there. And there was over 700 surrogacy births last year in Canada, and thousands of egg donations and sperm donors being used in Canada. So no, it's really opened up in Canada, particularly over the last sort of 5-6 years. So people, there's really, in my mind, no need to go to the U.S. In fact, it's typically cheaper, and a lot of the healthcare costs are covered if they stay in Canada.
Okay. So staying in Canada then. But the rules are, I suppose, that you can donate those things, but the rule is still in place, isn't it? That's not, you can't make money off of it.
That's right. You can't profit from it. So, what a lot of people do then is we ship in sperm and eggs from Canada. So the couple or the individual needing an egg or a sperm doesn't leave Canada, but we ship them in from the U.S. if they're not available in Canada.
And you mentioned surrogacy, because I would just think anecdotally that if you have a lesbian couple and what you're needing is sperm, and one of the women has decided they're going to carry the baby, it seems like that would make things a lot easier than a gay couple, say, then needing to go that extra step and find a woman who is going to be the surrogate and going to be the carrier.
That's right. It is easier because a lesbian couple will bring two things to the table. They'll typically bring eggs and a uterus, whereas gay male couples will bring just sperm. So they need two things. So it is harder. The hurdles are higher, but they're not insurmountable. But there are more barriers and hurdles for gay males. It's just they need more things to help.
And are you seeing an increase? I know in general you're seeing an increase in people seeking help from the clinic and services from the clinic, but particularly in the LGBTQ community, are you seeing an increase in people?
We are. We're seeing it in lesbian couples, gay males, and also trans patients coming in to preserve their fertility and advance them transitioning. We're seeing that's another group that's really we're seeing more and more of.
Well, that's an interesting. I hadn't even thought of that one as well. And that's, I would imagine, a certain amount of planning going. If you know you're going to be you're a trans, either trans woman or trans man, knowing that down the road you might want to start a family or change or have that option, then if you haven't taken this step, I would imagine it would be much more difficult.
Well, that's right. So it's better to come in advance. Now, some people can be partway through transitioning and still be able to freeze eggs or sperm in advance. But a lot of them, you know, are coming in a bit earlier and earlier. I think that's the trend we're seeing.
And you talked about egg freezing, and I know that you're a specialist in that field. That seems like a field when it comes to infertility that has had huge updates and huge increases in viability or in success rates compared to not really that long ago.
Yes, we changed the way eggs are frozen about, well, nearly a decade ago now, but really widely implemented about 5-6 years ago. So so as a result, we are better at it. Now, we're still not perfect at it, so we always have the caveat when it comes to egg freezing. You spend a lot of money and not have a baby at the other end, but it does give you a higher chance of having a baby if you freeze eggs now than if you try later on in life to get pregnant.
And what age do you suggest to people if people are considering that they should freeze the eggs?
The sooner the better, not to be glib, but definitely under 40, maybe before 35 is best.
All right. And how long do they last once, if a couple has decided or a single woman has decided that that's the route that she's taking? Can you freeze them? Obviously, your age then comes into play down the road. But is there a time limit on how long you can keep them?
No, there isn't. It's like sperm and embryos as well. Once they're frozen down in liquid nitrogen, they can seem to stay there for years and years without any harm to the pregnancy rates at the time that they're thawed.
Okay. And what happens to them then if people do that, they freeze the eggs or they freeze the embryos, say they have a child or situations change and they no longer want that? Do they just stay inevitably or what happens to them at that point?
Yeah, there's a few options. You can donate them to other people. You can just keep them frozen and not decide, or you can ask us to discard them. So it's your choice. They're your property to pick from.
Okay. And talking about this kind of branching out or making it so services are available to more and more people, do you see that there's been or was there perhaps in the past a bit of a stigma attached to it or people that were perhaps hesitant to get involved in fertility treatments and to go down that route? Are we seeing that kind of lift?
To some extent, I think there's still a bit of taboo around fertility and people not acknowledging that they're seeking treatment and having to hide it from their friends and family and employers. So no, I think it is better, but there's still a long way to go. People are still kind of embarrassed or feel broken by being infertile.
Which is unfortunate when we talk about it, even you and I having this conversation now, my guess is there are people listening who have dealt with infertility. It seems like it's one of those things, much like miscarriage too, that happens so much, but for some reason people feel that they can't talk about it.
So true. It is very much like miscarriage. People, it seems so private. And yet in my experience, when patients do start to talk about it with their friends, they tell me what a relief it was. Because often then their friends will disclose that they too had issues and things like that. So it's, I think once people start talking, there's only a benefit to them.
And do you find too, is it the fear of people? Because like you said, in a lot of cases, it's not only that you might be a couple, a gay couple or lesbian couple that need the help of a clinic, but in a lot of cases, it's people who have waited until later in life. Is there that fear that people kind of will look down on you in that, well, you couldn't do this naturally because you waited. It was kind of your fault. What are you doing having a baby at this late age? Or there's that fear that people won't be accepting of it?
I think that there's a lot of stigma, right? Everyone's supposed to have spent the first 10 years of the reproductive life not getting pregnant and the next 10 years getting pregnant. And that's a lot of pressure on people, especially in today's day and age when there's, you know, careers and financial factors. There's lots of issues to consider. So people are doing their best out there, and they don't need don't need judgment or a harsh eye because they waited to try to get pregnant.
Indeed. So if people are listening to this, so say somebody is listening to this and they've considered it, they've maybe been hesitant, what is the first step? Because I think that might also be a bit of a deterrent, people thinking it's intrusive and not knowing how much information they need to bring or give up. But what is the first step that you tell people who perhaps are struggling and want to start a family? What is the first thing they need to do?
Most people will go see their family doctor if they have one, or they'll contact us directly just by calling us, or there's an email, and they'll just email the fertility clinic directly and try to sort of, and we'll guide you from there. So that's, you know, if you don't have a family doctor, you're worried about going to your family doctor, you can contact us directly, and then we'll guide you. And oftentimes we'll tell people to go back to their family doctor, but ultimately we'll help you figure out a pathway to come in and see us and get help.
All right. Well, very good advice and timely, given that it is Pride Weekend, and that is a big part of the community that is serviced by clinics and that is becoming more and more a part of this. Dr. Taylor, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time today.